Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to TechEd Australia 2012, to the first session of the database track. So this is an extremely exciting year for Microsoft. There are a whole bunch of new products coming out. This is the first time in the company's history that every product is being refreshed. But you're absolutely in the right track. Databases, in a lot of cases, where a lot of these things start, but I really encourage everybody to look at the other things that are on offer outside the database track. Next week, TechEd TV will make all the other presentations available to you, and you'll be able to see then how we can go from the database stuff that you'll see through the track this week into other parts of the ecosystem. My name's Simon Brown. I'm a SQL Server Technical Specialist with Microsoft, and just want to thank you all for coming early on this Wednesday morning. So SQL Server this year has already gone through its refresh. 2012 was out, and there are some things that are going to inform everything that people in this room do in their day-to-day work. If we have any people in the room who are analysts, you may have seen that there is a feature in their PowerView, which links with another technology, PowerPivot. These things are key to being able to do really rich analytics, be able to deliver the right data to the right people, and that will inform what's coming a little bit later in the year, which is Office 2013. Excel is going to be augmented with some of these things. For developers in the room, you'll have seen that there are new tools in there like LocalDB. So if you're just doing TSQL development, you can install SQL Express on your desktop and just use it as a runtime development engine and not have to worry about having the overhead of services running. If there are people in the room who work in the infrastructure space, then there are the new technologies, like Always On, which are then moving through into other products that are coming, like Server 2012, and the way that Hyper-V is using its distributed data. And for people in the room who are solution designers, you'll find that there are things in SQL Server that now allow you to have massive scale. All the way out from your local data center through to services like Azure, you can put infrastructure as a service, SQL databases out there, and you can design your solution around the latency, not necessarily about how you go platforming things in your data center. So aside from the technology, at Microsoft, we are very, very proud of our partner ecosystem, and there are tens of thousands of partners that we work with worldwide to deliver both hardware for OEM and services and new third-party applications. I'd like to introduce one of our partners today who's going to talk about one of the key SQL technologies, and that's Wardy IT. So Wardy IT just been announced at our partner conference as our BI Partner of the Year. They're a fantastic resource. They have a stand downstairs. I'll let Warwick introduce himself as he goes through this, but the technology that he's going to talk to you about today will allow the right data to be in the right place at the right time, regardless of which role it is. So for analysts, your data can be where you want it to be. For infrastructure people, you can have that resilience and redundancy. For developers, you can start looking at things like moving all of your development work into cloud-based services, so you can have your own domain for development that you can spin up and shut down. I really encourage everybody to have a think about how they're going to use their data and how all of the other products that are coming out this year can help you deliver what you need to deliver, and have a look at the TechEd resources next week. Warwick and I are going to be available for questions, but we'd really like you to hold them until the end if you can, because there's a lot to get through. And there's also the speaker lounge afterwards. We'll be downstairs and be available for any questions, which is in the back of the showcase auditorium. So I'm going to hand over to Warwick.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks, everybody, for coming along to this morning's session. As Simon said, my name's Warwick Rudd. I'm a SQL Server consultant and certified trainer with Wardy IT Solutions. My contact details are up on the screen, so feel free to drop me a line at any point in time, or as Simon said, come and have a chat after this session down in the speaker's lounge. So before we get started in this morning's presentation, I just wanted to start with a little bit of a story. A couple of years ago, my wife and I went on holidays to New Zealand for our anniversary, and as her anniversary present to me, she bought me a skydive. Now, as you can see here, I'm falling headfirst out of a perfectly good plane, heading to Earth at a great rate of knots. Now, when my friends first saw this, the first question they asked was, did you have your life insurance paid up? And did your wife know about that it was all in place? Now, this type of question sort of goes with what we're here to talk about. Take last year. In Brisbane, we had the floods. Okay? If your data center was one of those data centers affected by the floods, this is the type of question that you're going to be asking. How do I recover from this situation? Right? I'm falling head first at a very great rate of knots. How am I going to hit the ground running and still be okay? So with that thought in mind, let's start the presentation. Okay? So in this morning's presentation, we're going to have a look at some of the technologies and components that you're currently using in your environment to meet your high availability or disaster recoverability requirements. We'll then move on to what we're here for, being SQL Server 2012 is always on. We'll have a look at the components in that. We'll have a look at how you can set up your environment and how you can manage it. We'll then round out the presentation with a demo of that environment. So with the technologies that we see up here, I'm not going to go into any great depth of these. I'm going to assume a little bit of knowledge on these technologies, okay? But you're probably using one of these technologies or all of these technologies or some of them in conjunction with each other. Have I missed anything up here that people are using to meet their high availability or disaster recoverability requirements? No? Looks pretty stock standard as to what you're currently using. Okay. So 2012 is always on. You're probably going, well, with these points up here, it looks pretty similar to what we've done or what was on the last slide. Okay. Windows Server Failover Clustering. It's been around a while. It was first came about in NT4 with Microsoft Cluster Services. Okay. Since then, it's evolved. Its capability of performing server-level failovers is quite good. Okay. One of the traditional things that you would all be aware of with clustered instances of SQL Server, with your storage, you had a requirement that you had shared storage. With 2012 always on, this is now no longer a requirement. You can have SAN, if you've got it. You can use NAS. You can use DAS. You can have local disk. So this is going to make your implementation a little bit cheaper, a little bit easier to manage. Database mirroring. It's been around a long time. It's a very good technology to move data from one location to another. In your current setups, though, what are some of the pain points that you're having with database mirroring? Anyone?
Single secondary.
And you can't use it. Well, you can. You can take a snapshot, but it's not real time. Okay. With 2012 always on, what they've done is they've made some enhancements to database mirroring. That, in conjunction with the failover cluster APIs, make up the backbone to 2012's always on. The advantage of database mirroring enhancements allow you to now have multiple secondaries, and you can actually use those secondaries. So with all of that combined, that now allows us to build our always-on cluster. So what we've got here is a potential environment that you could look at designing and building. So to run through the environment, we've got three data centers, one in Brisbane, one in Sydney, one in Melbourne. We've got a domain across the three data centers. The storage, in this case, we'll say we've got SAN, but we don't have to. We just happen to have it. We don't have any SAN level block replication happening between the sites. That's expensive. We've got the four servers, and we've got standalone instances of SQL Server on each of those servers. So that's a difference in itself to what you're currently using or setting up with your clustered installs. With that, on our BNE SQL 01 server, we've got our databases. This is our production server. Right? Those databases, we just need to identify which ones require high availability or disaster recoverability. Now, in the past, one of the things, if you're just using a multi-site Windows Server failover cluster, all of the databases on that particular instance all got that high availability and disaster recoverability. So if you're providing a shared environment, it's a lot of expense for some application databases that don't need it. With availability groups, right, they are just a bucket for you to combine databases that require to be failed over. Okay? They may be a case that you've got four databases for a particular application that all need to fail over at once. Under database mirroring, if you've got that requirement now, you can't do it easily, make three databases automatically fail over if the fourth one has had a problem and it's failed over. Okay, so you're able to group those databases into your availability group. With your availability groups, at the moment you're able to have 10 availability groups per instance and up to 100 databases across those availability groups. So once you've identified the databases that you want to group together and you've created your availability group, we then, with the databases that you've identified, we need to add those to that group. To do that, there are some rules that need to be met. So a database, to be able to participate in a availability group, it needs to be a user database, so no system databases. You can't have any read-only databases. You have to be in the full recovery model. You can't have the auto-close option turned on. And you can only have one database. A database can only participate in a single availability group. Obvious reasons, because if it fails over, which ones are going to fail over to? So once we've decided those databases, added them to the availability group, we need to decide how we're going to do the data transfer. Okay, so the data transfer, just like in database mirroring, you've got the availability of synchronous and asynchronous data transfer and your automatic and your manual failover. So if you're wanting automatic failover, you can only do synchronous data transfer. Manual, you can do either synchronous or asynchronous. Now, one of the other advantages with the availability groups is, as we can see from this diagram, for one availability group, we're using a combination of both synchronous and asynchronous data transfer, okay, to our multiple secondaries. Once we've created that, we've then got, and this is what I think is the real kicker for this technology, is the availability group listener. Now, the availability group listener is a virtual network name that, in this instance, we could be having three subnets, okay, one at each center. Now, that has been not a problem for Windows clustering for quite a while, but SQL Server prior to 2012 could not handle multiple subnets. You had to span your VLAN, okay? So our listener has the potential in this environment to have three IP addresses, and then it has the IP, the port number of the instance of SQL Server that is running on each of those servers. Now, the reason why I think that this key piece is what makes it a kicker is your applications no longer need to know what your server name is or what your instance name is of where the database is connecting to. In your connection string, you connect to the availability group listener. That's it. And as long as your application is able to poll, so when it loses connectivity, it polls, finds the listener again, reconnects automatically, your job is done. You don't have to do anything when you do a failover. Okay? Previously, if you had a different failover technology, there was things that you had to do to your application, possibly changing server names, DNS changes, etc. The availability group listener makes that a whole lot simpler. Now, a slight change to that is what we've got here. The only change that I've added is in Brisbane, if we wanted to provide some high availability in our Brisbane site for a server failure. So what we've done here is we've created a failover cluster instance of SQL Server, so what you're all used to having in place. So in that scenario, we would have to have SAN because the shared disk so that it can just do its normal job. If you're going to go down this route, there is one limitation, and that is on your availability groups, you can't have a automatic failover if you're using a failover cluster instance. Does that make sense? Because if your cluster goes down, it fails over, you've got that downtime for the server to go down, the second server to come back up, your databases to be brought online. So the availability group, with that happening underneath it, it can't tell whether it's supposed to fail over. So it's a limitation that you can't do that. You can only do a manual failover. Now that we've designed and we're looking at building our environment, okay, we've got multiple ways of being able to build our environment. T-SQL, we've got statements there that allow us to create, drop, alter our availability groups. PowerShell, there's a raft of commandlets in there that allow you to do all of the functionality, so those who like scripting, then it's all good for you. Or if you're like me and you're lazy, under Management Studio, you've got all of the wizards. And one of the advantages that they've added to it is they've created a dashboard, which allows you to quickly and easily see the state of play and the status of your environment with all of your availability groups. Now, when you're building your environment, there are some things to consider. With your security, okay, whatever security you've got set up on your primary, you need to have set up over on your secondaries, because in the event of a failover, your applications need to have the same security so that they can connect and do what they need to do. Now, security is at a server level, so it's not included in your availability groups. A good thing that you can use, one of the new features in 2012 being partially contained databases. Security is inside of that database. They're perfect for always on availability groups. If you don't use those, then you want to have some sort of process in place that checks the security on your primary, copies them over onto your secondary so that they are in play if there are changes and a failover occurs, they're already there and there's no problems with your application. Another thing to consider, licensing. Now, before you all put your hands up and ask questions about licensing, we're not here to talk about licensing. That's a whole different topic, okay? But we just need to make you aware that licensing is directly related to your environment and your setup. Now, this diagram that we've got here is taken straight out of the licensing guide. And what you can see is we've got three servers, one primary, which is active, and we've got two passive secondaries. Okay, you get one free passive secondary for your licensed active. So in this environment where we've got three servers with 12 cores on each, we would need to license 24 cores. Okay, so when you are doing your design or your build, I recommend when you come to thinking about it, you need to talk to your licensing reseller to make sure that your licensing is done appropriately. So with that in play, let's switch across to our demo. To give you a bit of a rundown, on my Hyper-V environment, I've got three servers set up in a clustered environment. Two of those servers are running on Server Core. Now, for those of you who have used Server Core or know about Server Core, there's no user graphical user interface. Okay, so you've either got to do it via scripting or have another server with remote admin. So what we're connected to right here is my domain controller. Now, this is a demo, so don't kill me. I am actually going to be running an application off of my domain controller. I know you're not supposed to do it, but I need to do it in this environment. I will be accessing those servers via remote management. So the first thing that you need to do when you're looking at enabling always on is you need to enable your instances to participate in always on availability groups. Now, because I'm doing this remotely on a computer management console, normally you would go into your server to the SQL Server Configuration Manager and you would see the same thing. So we're connected to our server and we have a look at the properties of our instance. Now, there's a new tab. I'll just zoom in for you. There's this new tab called Always On High Availability. And you'll see this checkbox, Enable Always On Availability Groups. To enable it, it's very simple. You can do it via PowerShell, or you can come in here to this user interface using your configuration manager, hit OK. Now, the thing that you need to do is restart all of the, you need to do that on all of the instances participating in your cluster, and you need to restart all of the instances for that to take effect. Now, I'm only doing it on one server. The other two servers, I've already got them in play because it's a waste of time going and doing those while we're going through the presentation. On our server, so this is my third server which is participating in the cluster, and it's just running Windows Server 2008 R2, and it has Management Studio so that we can manage our environment, we can see what we're doing. So what you'll see here is that we've now got a new tab called Always On High Availability. that if you haven't enabled your environment, you will see that that in your tree. If you try and access it, it will give you an error. Okay. Now, before we go on much further, I just want to say, don't be too concerned about if you miss some of the steps on what we're doing. At the end, I've got some additional material, one of which is a blog post, which will run through everything that we've done today. Okay, so feel free to just sit back, relax, and enjoy the presentation. So what we're going to do, now that we've enabled always on in our environment, the first thing that we want to do is create a availability group. Now, as I said, this is easily done with the wizards. So we just do a right click, new availability group wizard. Next. There we go. And the first thing we want to do is give it a name. So just a bit of pre-work. Now, we've got a couple of databases here. When you are going and adding your databases, as I said, there's the rules that need to be met. If a database doesn't meet the rules, then it will come up here and it will tell you in this status. At this point in time, my two databases both are okay to be added to an availability group. So I'm just going to add one of the databases at this point, the AdventureWorks database. Now, this is where you're determining how you're going to do your data transfer and your failover. Okay, so for this one, I'm going to do an automatic failover, and as you can see, it automatically selected synchronous. At this point in time, you've also got the ability to decide whether you want your secondary databases available and usable on your secondary servers. Okay, we're not going to, for this particular availability group, now I'm going to create two, we're not going to make them available, and we're going to add our replicas that we're going to be going across to. Now I'm going to say that on server core node 2, I'm going to do the same thing. Now, leaving it as non-accessible. And for our third, I'll just connect to our server GUI node 3. And we can see here that I can't set it up as automatic. That was one of the restrictions saying that we can only have up to two synchronous data transfers, okay, for an availability group. Now it's doing that because we're saying, okay, when server core node 1 is running as the primary, I'm going to synchronously be going over to that server core node 2. Server core node 2, I'm going to be going synchronously back to server core node 1. So we're still I'm going to leave this as asynchronous to show you that we're setting it up having multiple types of data transfer. Now, one of the things that you can do, if you've got automated backups, all right, you can schedule the automated backups to run on a different secondary. So you might want to shift that performance from your primary onto a secondary. So you're able to do that in this tab here by adjusting the priority of the different servers. The highest priority is where the backup jobs will run. I don't have any automated backups running in this environment, so I'm just going to leave it. With the listener, you've got the ability to create the listener right now, or you've got the ability to create it after the fact. It doesn't matter, okay? What you need to be aware of, so we're going to create it now, but what you need to be aware of, because it's creating a virtual network name, all right, the account that you're running this setup as, one either needs to have access to AD to go and create objects, okay, because it's going and creating a computer object, or most big shops, you'd put a request into your AD administrator saying, I'd like this created. You give them the name, they give you the IP address or IP addresses, and you as admins already know what port your SQL Server is going to be listening on. So we give it a name. Now, because I'm running default ports, I'm just using 1433. Oops. Now, the thing that you do want to remember, all of your environments, you want to make them the same. So in this environment, I've got the three instances as default instances. You can have them as named instances, as long as they're all the same and your directory structure is the same. If they're not, it's not a problem, but then you can't use the wizard to go and do the automatic setup. Okay, you've got to do it via scripting because you've got to change the directory structures where things are going. Okay, so part of your design, think about how you're going to have it, what type of scenario you want to use it in. Now, to set up the secondary databases, we need to do backup. So we need to have a share that all of the servers in the cluster have access to. Okay. So this is a share that I've set up that all three of them have access to, and I'll just make sure that I'll just clean it out so that we don't have any issues. Then it goes through and does some checks to make sure that we're all good to go. Once we're all good to go, just like any good wizard, we can review what we've done. We've got the ability to script this out to use it later, save it, or make modifications. You might want to change server names, etc., from your dev environment to your prod environment, however you look at doing your deployments. We go finish. Now, what this is doing, it's going and creating the availability group. It's going and taking a full database backup from our primary server, restoring that on our secondary server and then our third server. It's then taking a transaction log backup, restoring it, leaving the database in a non-recoverable state, okay, until it's at the end. Then it goes and adds those secondary servers to the availability group and enabling the databases to be used depending on whether you've set them to be readable or read intent. Now, read intent is where you can set the database. It's not accessible inside of Management Studio, but your application is able to connect to that secondary database as long as in your connection string it has the read intent words in the connection. So once it's completed, we've got all green ticks. I have a yellow warning, but that's okay. It's just about my quorum setup, but not a problem. So when we do a refresh of our availability groups, we can see we've now got the new availability group that we've created. I'm just going to create a second availability group, and this is the script that would do it. Now, my script is set up to use SQL command mode, so I just need to turn that on. And what I'm going to show you is, this is the part just here, okay? So in our create availability group, we've got our availability group name. We've got our database that we're going to be adding to that availability group, and we've got our couple of servers that we're going to use as our primary replica and our secondary replicas, okay? We're able to set the what type of failover mode, what type of data transfer mode, and what type of access are we going to have to the databases. So I've got here connections equal all, which means that I'm allowing the secondary databases to be readable. So I'll just kick that that off, and it'll be a whole lot quicker than our GUI, and there we go, we've created our secondary availability group. So once you've created your availability groups, you've got the ability to, and I'll just expand these, and so we can see there, under our replicas, it lists your replica servers that are participating in that particular availability group, the database, and whether we've got a listener or not. And you'll see the little green tick there beside the database, down here. That's telling us that we're currently synchronizing. So we just go back to our demo. What I'm going to do here, just to show that our transfer is all set up, I'm just going to create connect to our database, create a very simple table, insert 300 rows of data, and then select those 300 rows. Okay, and then I'm going to connect to our secondary to test that as well. Now we can see I've got 300 and 280. Okay, now obviously with the time that it's taken for me to do the insert and then finish, go and connect to our secondary and run the select statement, I've been quicker than what the actual data transfer is. Okay, if I was to go back in now and do a select, those extra 300 are on that server. Okay, but this is just showing you the difference in latency, and I'm just on a couple of little VMs. Now, on your latency, I was recently on a client site doing a proof of concept, okay, for an availability group set up between Sydney and Canberra. Now, to do testing, I was set up for synchronous data transfer, and on our Sydney server, we did a 10,000 row insert into a table, and that took about 10 seconds for the transaction to complete. Okay, so for it to write to our Sydney server, synchronous transfer over to our Canberra server, commit over there, send the commit back, and we're all good. Now, the type of data transfer that you're going to set is going to be dependent on the distance between your data centers, what sort of bandwidth you've got, how chatty your application is, what are your SLAs, okay? Can your application cope with that type of latency, right? When I changed over from synchronous to asynchronous, bang, right? Finished straight away on our Sydney server, as you'd expect. On our secondary server in Canberra, it took about 3 seconds for that to catch up, okay? So they had the potential of losing 3 seconds worth of data, and that's what you've got to be careful of. Now, one of the things that you'd look at doing once you've created your availability groups is you want to create a backup. You go and add a new database. So someone's put a request in, we need this new database. It's been put on that server. So you need to be able to add it to an availability group. So I'm just going to create a very simple database here and do a backup. Then to add it to an availability group, you can script it via statements, you can do it via PowerShell, or with your availability group, you've got add database. It's very simple. It's running through the same process. And this is where we can see the AdventureWorks and the Wardy IT always on test. They already participate in availability group, so we can't reselect them. So adding our new database that we've just added, same as what we did when we were first creating our first availability group. We've got the backup directory that we need to have access to on all of our servers. We connect to our secondary that we're going to be putting it across to, and it does the same checks that we did before, and we're able to, once again, script it out to use it in another environment. That was a whole lot quicker because it's having to do less work. It's literally doing the backup, the restore, adding it to the availability group, bringing it online. So, now that we've added that, one of the things that you might want to do, where we were saying before, you can shift the workload, right? Some of the performance workload off of your primary. So we've got here a DBCC checks DB statement that we're going to look at running on our server core node 2. Now, if we just connect to our server core node 2, just do a refresh. Our AdventureWorks database, if I try and connect to it, it throws an error. Okay, that's because we didn't set it up to be readable. Where our other databases, I set them up as readable so that I can actually access them. Now just remember this secondary, I'm accessing it, it's active, I need to license it, okay? So this is where we were saying you need to really consider your licensing and talk to your reseller. Now, who thinks that if I run this checkDB statement on the secondary server, given that I've just tried to connect to it and failed, should this work or not? Yes? Yes, a couple of yeses? Noes? No? Okay. So we'll just run that, shouldn't take too long. And there we go, it's actually completed successfully. Anybody want to have a go at why I've been able to run a checkDB against a database that is offline and I can't access? Sorry? Yeah, but how's it been able to do it? There we go, running snapshotting. Now, one of the things that you also need to consider or know about, okay, where I said when we were setting up our availability group, we can set up where our backups are done automatically, right? If you're going to run a manual backup, if you're going to run it against a secondary database, you can only do it using the with copy only. Okay? It's just something for you to be aware of. Now, with your environment set up, as I said, they've created this dashboard. So we can come in, have a look at the dashboard, and it shows us our application, or shows us our availability groups that are all set up. Green ticks are good, that's what management likes to see. But we can dive down into our environment, and it shows us there's all of our nodes that are participating. which one's primary, which one's secondary, what type of failover mode, whether we're synchronized or synchronizing, depending on whether we're synchronous or asynchronous. And it shows us the status of each of the databases. So as we can see down the bottom, on our server GUI node 3, it says data loss. Okay, so we've got the potential for data loss because we've set up in asynchronous. And it's dependent on the distance, your bandwidth, how chatty it is. Okay. Now, with your failovers, one of the things, if you're currently working in a clustered environment, you're used to working in Cluster Manager. Okay. In 2012, in Always On, we don't need to go into Cluster Manager at all. Okay. I'm just going to fire it up just to show you what we've got set up. Now, normally, you'd see cluster resources, right, for each of your clustered instances. The only resources that we have in here, we've got our two availability groups. That's it. Okay, and if we have a look at our auto availability group, we've got our listener, okay, because it's the listener that fails over, right? And it says bring up the database online over there. So you don't come into Cluster Manager to do your failovers. Stay away from Cluster Manager. In Management Studio, in from the dashboard, up in the top right-hand corner, you've got Start Failover Wizard, or on the actual availability group, we've got Failover. Okay? Or you can do it manually in scripts, either T-SQL, PowerShell. Okay? But you don't need to go into Cluster Administrator. So what we're going to do now is, this is where I said don't shoot me because I'm going back to my DC, and I've got an application. Now, this application is we've got our data source to our availability group listener that we set up. We've got our initial catalog to our AdventureWorks database. That's it. Okay. If I hit play, right, that's going and connected to, I'll just expand it so that so we're connected to the AdventureWorks DW database on server core node 1. This application, all it's doing is doing some inserts, some updates, some select statements of that database. Right? So while that's running, I'll duck back to our environment, and I'm going to simulate a server failure. Now, I'm just going to simulate that by stopping my instance of SQL Server. So while that's stopping, we'll just watch, come back here, and we've sort of stopped. Now, hopefully, this should quickly show us a drop in connection. Now, I haven't done anything to the application. We'll let it up. It should show us a drop in connection, and then it should swap back over and start back up again, automatically connecting to our server core node 2. Where are we at with the shutdown? And we can see straight away, just took a little bit of time for it to reconnect, but we can see that we're now connected to our AdventureWorks database on server core node 2. That's how simple it is for your applications to reconnect. Okay, and you've had to do no change at all for your users to be able to reconnect and be up and running again. So in our dashboard, we can see that we've got a problem with that particular server, okay, with the red X. With the refresh, this will come back and it should show us an error for our automatic. But while we're waiting for that to come back, if I do a refresh on our databases, okay, our AdventureWorks database is now available. We've failed it over, but our Add to AAG and our WardEIT test are no longer available. How come we can't access those anymore? No. They were set up for a manual failover. Okay. So our server went down. We automatically failed over one availability group. We now need to fail over manually our other availability group onto our secondary server. To do that, you've got some options. You can come into the availability groups. We can right-click on our manual and go failover, and it will start the wizard. But we've got nothing there. Okay. In this scenario, because I've only got two servers participating in this particular availability group, one server is completely offline. The GUI doesn't know where it's to connect to fail it over. So we can't use the GUI to fail it over. We have to do it manually. So once again, using SQL command mode, right, we're able to connect to our server, telling it the availability group and saying force failover, allow data loss. So if we run that, do a refresh, and our databases are now up and online. Okay. Once you've resolved that issue, okay, so we can dive into our automatic. Oh, we're on our primary server, which isn't on. So where's our dashboard? So we can see that our automatic availability group has a big red X. So we come in, we have a look. Oh, the server's offline. Okay. So the easy way for us to fix it, and I wish they were always this easy, I'll come in and I'll start my instance of SQL Server. Okay. Because that started with the refresh of your dashboard, it's already back and up and online and automatically synchronizing back to our primary environment. So if we go back out to our upper level, we can see that our manual one is in an issue, okay? And so we're able to dive in and have a look at the warnings, and it says data synchronization state of availability databases is not healthy, okay? So it's not synchronizing from our secondary server, which is now primary, back to server core node one. So what we need to do is we need to fix that by coming into our availability group for our manual availability group, go to our databases. Now, just before when I see here now we've got two little pause symbols as opposed to before where we were looking at it, had the green play button. Because it was restarted, we need to manually start the data transfer between them so we can just right-click on it and resume data. And that's just setting up that synchronization back again, getting it to a state of play that we can look at failing back. Now, with any of your groups that you've got set up as manual failover, we can do what we just did. In the event of a failure, it's not there. We need to fail it over, and we're going to accept some data loss or potentially some data loss. When you're going to manually fail it back in a controlled way, there is no actual manual failover in a controlled way for asynchronous data transfer. What you need to do is you need to change your the properties of that availability group. We'll just expand it again. And change your availability mode from asynchronous to synchronous so that you can actually get your environments fully synced. You haven't lost any data. Now, because you're doing it in a controlled manner, you're not going to have your applications connecting to it, so you're not going to have latency, etc. You as administrators are the one in working it. Okay, so for that very short period in time where you've still got your users out, swap it over to synchronous. Once we're on synchronous, we're able to then fail that over. Okay, so we've got the server that we need to connect to. Make our connection and say fail over. This will, in a controlled manner, put us back to where we want to be. Okay. Once we've done that, we can then come into our secondary or our now primary environment, have a look at the properties of it, and change it back to asynchronous because that's what we want. Then allow our users to connect back in. So what we've covered off here in this demo, we've had a look at how to create an availability group. That availability group is going to multiple secondaries, both readable and non-readable. We've set them up so that it's using both synchronous and asynchronous data transfer. We've had a look at how to fail over, how we can actually have a look at the state that our environment is in. Now, with 2012, they have included some DMVs for you to be able to dive in and have a look at your environment. So what I've got up here, I've got some DMVs which broken down so you can actually have a look at your cluster level. So what's participating in our cluster, right? How's it set up? What members do we have? Okay, so you can write your own statements. A lot of these DMVs are what are used in the dashboard. Okay, so it's just something to be aware of. For those of you who like to dive down deeper into the DMVs, they are available for you. We've seen how we can manually fail over, how we can fail back, how our application is connected to a availability group via the availability group listener. Okay, so that brings us to the end of the demo. And how are we going for time? Actually, quite good. Yep, we're good. Right, we'll flip back over. So with that involved, it brings us to our question time. So now we've got plenty of time to answer everyone's questions, okay? And we can go back to any of the slides. We can go back and have a look at any of the environments. Before I open the floor to questions, as I said, I'm just going to go to the next slide, okay? And I'll leave this up on the screen as some additional material. Now, the top slide there is a white paper on how you can set up an environment for using 2012's Always On. The second one there, as I said, is a blog post which takes you through all of the steps that we've done. And then the last one there on the weight statistics up on Simple Talk as well. It's a very good blog post by Joe Sack of SQL Skills, diving down into the new weight stats that are available for 2012's Always On. Okay, so I'll leave that up now. I think this will be available.
All content's available from next week.
So it'll be available. You'll have these links. You'll be able to use the slide and go from there. So we'll leave that up, and we'll now open the floor to any questions. Yes?
When you set the failover mode to be asynchronous, does that sit on any kind of schedule?
So the question was, with asynchronous transformation, does it sit on any schedule? Okay, so it's like the same as when you had normal database mirroring in 2008 R2 and prior. The asynchronous is based on, it sends it to the send log, it's then sent across, then there's the reader on your secondary to then load that up. Now you're able to keep track of that in the DMVs to see what your send rate is and what your load rate is, to keep track of potentially how much data loss you could lose based on how quickly it's loading, okay? And you want to, if your environment is really, really chatty, then you want to be on top of that so that you're aware when a potential problem happens, how much data loss you may lose, okay? Yes? Sorry, do I... it will depend entirely on where you're sending it, okay? If we go back to... So if we go back to this slide, what we can see is where we've got it going, synchronous going from SQL 01 to SQL 02 in Brisbane, okay? Potentially, these two servers may be sitting in the same rack, okay? But if you're going from Brisbane to Sydney and you're doing synchronous, as I said, when we did the proof of concept, we had synchronous between Sydney and Canberra, okay? 10-second latency. So it depends on the gap, the distance that you've got between and how chatty your environment is as to what sort of speed you're going to require so that you have a latency that you're suitable with.
That's very much a requirements issue, though. I mean, so if you're only ever uploading one row every 15 minutes, but you want to absolutely make sure that somebody over there sees the same thing as the person over here, put it into synchronous and don't worry so much about the fact that it's going to take 10 seconds for that return to come back and the data to be available.
Sorry, can you...
So, say for instance, you have a 10-second latency.
Yep.
If you have a failover during that period, can you anywhere determine on the secondary server that there's dirty, or is that just you lose the data and live with it?
If it hasn't been committed, then there is that potential that you've lost that data. Now, what you do need to be careful of, with in the demo where I showed that when we brought our server back up and online, for that availability group that was set up as asynchronous and manual, okay, and I had to resume the data transfer, okay, in that scenario, if you're able to bring your server up and online, right, you can then, before you resume that data transfer, on your primary server, which is up, it's just going to be sitting there, your application's working, right? You're then able to connect to your old primary that you've brought up and online and have a look at the data that was there. If your application does cater for you to pull that data out after the fact, because you may have been up and running for a week, and does it cater for you pulling that data which you potentially lost and loading it into your system, then you'd have to do that manually, but it's dependent on your application catering for that. Okay. Yes. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. But the things like dependency trees and yellow scale back settings and all those sort of things,
mm-hmm.
you still do it in the cluster administrator?
Okay, so when you're first setting it up, you've got... So the question was, with the configurations on your cluster, okay, how I mentioned that we don't need to work in cluster administrator anymore, we just work in Management Studio. So taking a step back from that, when we're setting up our environment, okay, we've got our four servers. What we need to do is on each of those servers, we need to enable the failover cluster features and roles, okay? You're then going and creating your Windows Server failover cluster as normal, okay? Which is what you would do prior to installing SQL, okay? That's a Windows Server failover clustering technology. You still set that up exactly the same. You then do your installation of SQL Server, which is then utilizing those APIs to do the failover of your availability groups.
Yeah. So the question is, like, normally in the cluster administrator, you can say that the SQL agent, for example,
is a dependency.
Everything else is a group, basically. So yep. Do you still do it the same way?
Well, you don't need to, because the with your clustered install, okay, it creates a resource which has SQL Server, has your agent, has your network name, has your IP, and has your disks. And so you go and set the dependencies on those being brought up and online. Okay? Because we've done standalone instances of SQL Server, with the database mirroring, your instances are there all the time, your databases are there all the time being mirrored across. So when the failover occurs, it moves that availability group listener and then brings the database up and online from a mirroring point of view. So you don't have that clustering dependency on you must start SQL Server before you can start the agent, okay? That clustering dependency is gone unless you're in this environment and we've got our clustered instance of SQL Server, then it would be exactly the same, okay? Because you're setting it up as normal, that has nothing to do with always on. Okay, does that answer your question? Yes? Okay.
There's one over here as well.
Okay, so I'll go. Did you still have a question? No? Okay, so I'll do your second question, come to you, and then we've got one over here, yes? All right, quickly.
It seems like it's all based on mirror in the city.
As the data transfer?
Yes, so you had things like, for example, you had a curve page on the secondary and you could still recover it from the primary or vice versa, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So are those features still there and do you have an interface for those?
Yes.
You had a mirroring feature.
Yes.
Recovering the page and making it awesome.
Okay. So the question, if I'm understanding it correctly, if we get some data corruption for a page level, is it still able to be fixed?
Yes.
So yes, in database mirroring and in always on, because it's using the database mirroring technology, it does have the auto page detect and fix that if it detects it over on the primary that it's corrupt, and it can get it from the secondary, it will automatically fix that. Okay.
Do you have experience with how always on coexists with resource governor? If I have a resource governor configured on primary server, do I need to set up the secondaries the same as primary?
Okay, so the question was, with resource governor being set up in always on, if we've got resource governor set up on the primary, do we need to manually configure it the same on the secondary? Okay, I would say I've not played with it, but I would probably say yes, because once again, resource governor is a instance level setting. Okay, so you're creating your different groups, have your function to determine when the connections are coming in, which group they're in, and what type of resources that they're going to be granted. Okay, so because it's at an instance level, you would still need to set those up the same on your secondaries.
So that probably leads into a good point, that the secondary doesn't have to be an identical mirror from the instance level as the primary, right? You could have two databases on your primary and you might only want one mirrored across to your secondary. Okay, so the secondary is a copy of the database, the instance is just another instance in the cluster.
Hang on a sec, did we have one over here? Okay, so the question was, if you've got a very large database and it's going to take a long time to get that backup across to another environment, can you utilize a third-party product to get that database across to your secondary to bring it up and online? I would say the answer to that would be yes, because all you're looking at doing, just like when you're setting up normal database mirroring, okay, you just need to get that database over onto your secondary, bringing it up to a state of play. Okay, so you do your full database backup, or potentially your full database backup and then some differential backups over time to get it there, and then with your transaction logs to bring it up to speed. Okay, and then it's that last transaction log bringing it up to speed to before you enable it into the availability group. And that's where with the scripting, you can do those steps yourself. You don't need the wizard is just doing it all in one. But for your VLDB, then yes, you would do it manually. How you get that database from your primary to your secondary to start your restore, you could use any technology that you want. You would then need to do the scripting component to bring it all up and online. Okay? Yes. With
and is it the overhead increase with every secondary group or is it constant?
Okay, so the question was, with having always on set up, that on your secondaries, is there a resource overhead from both CPU and memory on your secondaries as well as your primary?
Just primary.
Just primary. And does it increase with the number of availability groups that you've added? Okay. Now, to answer that, I'd probably go back, take a step back and go, where I said in the presentation that you've got a limit of 10 availability groups with 100 databases, okay, that limit is more than likely set at a resource availability limit. Okay, so just like in database mirroring, you're constrained to the number of databases that you can mirror. Okay, now there are calculations out there that you can work out how much resources a mirrored database will consume on your primary server. Okay, so depending on how many you're doing, it is going to affect that resource. As for an increase, inadvertently increasing the workload on your primary by 10%, 20%, or exponential as you add more, I don't have a answer on that, but I would probably assume it is just based on... Oh, Raj at the back might be able to... Well, see,
So for the recording, that was SQL CAT has some good white papers on resource overhead, and then there was a question about TempDB, and is there any impact on TempDB? And we believe that's part of the SQL CAT stuff as well.
Okay. Okay, so the question was, is always on replacing clustering, or does clustering have a role going forward? I would answer yes, that clustering still does have a role moving forward, okay, because you might not want to set up this environment, okay? You might just need to use a single-site Windows Server failover cluster to give you some high availability from a server failure, okay? This is just using the Windows clustering technologies to make it simpler and to give you a more granular control over your environment.
Is the synchronous still available
or standard edition also? Okay, so the question was around the additions of licensing. Now, Always On is a enterprise only feature. Yes.
In regards to backing up on the secondary,
yes.
Does Microsoft have any plans to allow for normal login and backups instead of just copy only?
Okay, so the question was around taking backups on the secondaries and around being able to take full backups on the secondaries rather than copy onlys. You can, when you set up your backups, let's talk about transaction log backups to start with, okay? For your automated backups, you can have those set up and they can actually run on a secondary rather than a primary if you wanted to shift the workload, okay? And it's actually taking a full transaction log backup, and that is clearing your transaction log on the primary as well as on your secondaries, okay? The same if you are running a scheduled full backup, you can have them run on one of your secondaries, and it is a full backup. It's only if you go into Management Studio and you do a manual full backup, you can only run the backup with backup only. Okay, so it's only the non-scheduled ones that you must use the with copy only.
So the capability is there?
The capability is there as long as it's scheduled. Yes, this is new in It is part of the always on availability groups. Okay. So you're running SQL Agent, okay, and you've got some maintenance jobs. I hope everybody's got maintenance jobs doing backups. If not, come and see me and we'll sort something out. But yeah, you're just running agent jobs, then they can be scheduled to go and run against a secondary. So the question was around whether it's a scripting limitation versus a management. I wouldn't say so. I would say that they've just added it so that you can't. I think it's just a restriction that they've put in. I may be wrong, but okay. Anybody else?
Up the back there.
Yes.
So the question is, if you are backing up off your secondary server, do you need to have a license for that server? And the answer is yes. So that's considered an active workload. You need to license every active workload.
Yes. Okay, so the question was with regards to having VLDBs on secondaries and running a CheckDB against that and the type of latency that you could get. Okay, so for that question, well, with your CheckDB, okay, when you're running it on your secondary, it's not going to impact your primary, right? It could have some impact on, depending on how chatty your environment is, on how many transactions you're going through. And if you're in a synchronous data commit mode, you've got to wait for it to commit on your secondary before it commits on your primary. Okay. So when you're running that CheckDB, depending on at that point in time, it has the potential to cause a little bit of an impact on that, which would then cause some backlog with your latency on your primary. Okay, so in that case with the VLDB, you'd have to look at how you're looking at doing it, whether you break it down. Just like anything with a VLDB, you need to look at the environment on how your maintenance jobs are going to be run so that you still maintain your window.
But if you're taking a snapshot, for example, it shouldn't really impact like it's a snapshot. You know, like you, isn't that whole idea like DBCC?
Yeah, it takes that snapshot, puts it into the tempDB, and utilizes the tempDB. Okay, it's still checking. I didn't say it would. I said it has the potential of possibly causing some backup, some latency. Okay, up the back. So the question was, can you run stored procedures on secondaries that are not changing any data? Okay, so with that, you're not able to change any data because with your secondaries, the only thing that they can be is a read-only. Okay, so if your stored procedure, as long as it's not trying to do anything, then yes, as long as you've made the database into a readable state, okay, if you've got it set as the read intent, then in your connection string from your application, it needs to state that it's in a read intent mode and it will be able to hit that table, whatever that you're looking at retrieving your data from. Down the front.
Clustering as opposed to mirroring.
Yes.
Time between your failover of a cluster service as opposed to changing essentially point to your mirroring database.
Okay, so the question was the difference between clustering and mirroring with a failover, the time that it takes for a failover on a cluster to go down, come back up and become available versus the time for the mirroring to come become available. Okay, so the time for your cluster to take, if you're talking traditional failover clustering, right, with a clustered instance, the time for that is all dependent on the server or servers that you've got, the resources that are there, the size of your databases, et cetera, because the instance has to start back up. So there's processes that it needs to go through to bring those up and online. In 2012, because we're just that database is there, there's those transactions which potentially need to be rolled forward to bring it up and online. That is going to be quicker, okay? But you've got, there is that latency in the time it takes to fail the listener from one server to another. So that will be impacted depending on whether you're in the same data center or whether you're going across data centers for that to then become up and online, okay? But I would still expect that that would potentially be quicker than your failover clustered instance, depending on the size of the resources and the databases that you have in your instance. Okay?
So in general speaking terms, we're going from minutes to seconds. Yeah. Yeah, because you're right, all that's changing is a pointer to where the database is. So another benefit for that when you're setting things up is the concept of when you're going to do a migration going forward, depending on how you've got that availability group set up, but let's say we've got one database per availability group, because things are named at the listener now, when you're going to do a migration, you don't have to redevelop the application to put in a different instance name or anything, and you don't need to group all of your databases together when you're doing a migration, because it's all done at that listener level.
Okay, so the question was around service packs and applying service packs to your different environments in a 2012 always-on environment. Now, with your service packs, the upshot to it is that you're able to stop the data transfer to to your secondary, apply the service packs, and you haven't impacted any of your processing. Okay, so you could actually, like in clustering, do a rolling patch upgrade, but in this environment we could do it to the Melbourne and the Sydney servers without impacting Brisbane at all. We could even do it to our second server in Brisbane. So we've done three servers without doing any impact. We could then look at doing a failover from our primary in Brisbane to our secondary in Brisbane. So therefore your failover time, you're staying in the same data center, you haven't actually moved, apply your service pack on that original primary and then fail it back. So it gives you that flexibility.
So I do understand that if you're in a large data center and you've got a lot of these things set up, that could take a significant amount of time, which goes back to my initial point when I opened around the other things that are going on at TechEd. Have a look at the system center automation and patching stuff afterwards. Or you can go to the session if you want to give up a database session, but why would you? And see what is available there for System Center. Or go and have a talk to some of the people on the stand at the showcase later on.
Okay. Now, if there's no more questions, just to finally wrap up. Ooh, that's not part of my slide. Ah, he's taken my slide off. Okay. There we go. Gone too far.
Lovely.
So going back to our story at the start, where I was falling headfirst out of a perfectly good plane at a great rate of knots, okay, my processes to get to the ground safely, I had a fella strapped to my back who had a chute. He knew how to use it. We both get to the ground, everybody smiles. So the same thing in your environment with this now set up, you've got those policies and processes in place, you've got the environment set up. When you have a problem, you're quickly and easily able to fail over to one of those secondaries with very little impact and everybody walks away smiling. Okay? So on that. That brings me to the end of...
Thank you. And I'll just quickly go on that. So one of the ways that we can improve is by getting feedback from everybody. So we would really like everybody to fill in their evaluation forms and pop them into the designated spots. And this year you can win a mouse. If there are any other questions, please make sure you come down and visit us in the speaker lounge. And we had Raja speaking up the back. He'll be available as well. He's sitting over there. The Wardy guys also have a stand down in the showcase area, so they're very approachable and very available to help you deliver stuff into your organisation. Thank you very much for attending, and thank you very much to Warwick for his talk.
Thank you very much, everybody. Okay, so quickly...